William Willimon talks about the story that I'm about to read as one that should be relished, not explained. It is an incredibly visually rich story. And so I invite you, as you are comfortable, to close your eyes as I read it and imagine it. How do you see it? What does it look like to you? Many throughout history have created art to depict it. So what would your piece of art look like? If you'd like, you can even keep your eyes closed and keep imagining all the way through the choral anthem, as it offers us a musical rendition of this picture. So I invite you to not simply hear, but to see the word of the Lord from Mark 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, and led them up a high mountain, apart, by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." Peter did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. One would have thought that at some point during the months of planning, or even during the years of saving, I would have realized that a trip to the longest mountain range in the world might involve heights. It seems obvious the Andes Mountains are high, and yet I still ended up on the side of a cliff, unable to move forward or backward, terrified. I'm a little afraid of heights. I know this about myself. I don't stand on chairs to change light bulbs. I make Ben do that. I don't like standing on balconies. Don't even get me started on bridges. Heights are a problem. And yet, off I went with Ben and two of our close friends to the top of Huayna Picchu. Everyone's heard of Machu Picchu. And you've all seen Huayna Picchu, even if you don't know it. This is the classic picture of Machu Picchu that everyone is familiar with. See that big jagged mountain behind it? That's Huayna Picchu. And for some crazy reason, I let Ben talk me into climbing it. They only let 400 people a day climb up there. And it does give you an incredible view of the ruins. But it is way, way high up. Like over 8,000 feet above sea level high up. And it's just shy of 1,000 feet above Machu Picchu. And there are not guardrails. There aren't even any "be careful, watch your step" signs. There's one way up and one way down. Well, that you can survive. There's always another way down when it comes to heights. Thus my fear. Just take a look at the way down. Those are steps. And then here are some of our friends on some of the other steps. That shot gives me vertigo even now. But the way up is what got to me. It had not been easy to summit. Lots of walking along the edge of cliffs, staring down into ravines, I put on a happy face and I pushed through because I'm tough and I'm adventurous and I always think that my adventurous spirit is going to outwit my fear. The last 30 feet or so to the top involves climbing up on your hands and knees through a rock tunnel that you kind of had to twist your body to squeeze you and your backpack through. Did I mention that I'm a little claustrophobic as well? So you squeeze through this tunnel out onto a rock face, and it's like the whole world opens up below you. You are staring down on top of Machu Picchu, and it is breathtakingly awesome. And way, way high up. I mean, way high up. And I was done. I was just done. I emerged from the tunnel, saw the look down, almost tossed my cookies, and sat down right there and burst into tears. Ben lovingly ventured out to the edge of the cliff to get a better view with our friends. He told them I'd be fine. They should just enjoy themselves and leave me alone. The strangers coming up behind us were cursing me in other languages, I'm sure, because I was half blocking the exit out of the tunnel. But I was not moving, except for the uncontrolled shaking. I was not moving. I was terrified. And to this day, I am so thankful I did it. There is precious little I trade those memories for, even the memories of the terror. You see, Machu Picchu is high enough in the Andes that it's considered a cloud forest. The clouds just gather in all around, and slowly, each morning, as the sun rises, more and more of the clouds burn away, revealing more and more of the ruins, giving you a bigger and bigger glimpse of what it's really like. We took a bus up at sunrise and watched as more and more of the ruins became visible. There were still clouds shrouding the ruins in mystery by the time I got to my crying spot. And more continued to be revealed, until we could see the whole site in its full glory. When I picture the story of the transfiguration of Jesus on that mountain, this is what I think of. Peter, James, and John have been following Jesus. They have gotten to see partially who he is and what he is about. And then there on that mountain, Jesus is fully revealed. Who he truly is in all his glory as the Son of God alongside Moses and Elijah, the disciples are able to see no longer in part, but fully. Of course they were terrified. Of course they didn't know what to say or do. Of course Peter had to say something anyway. Perhaps like me, he should have just sat down and cried. But Peter wants to hold on to that moment forever. He wants to create a place to capture the glory, to contain it, to understand it, to never again be far away from it. I get that impulse. We call these moments, these glimpses that we see of God's glory or Jesus' presence or God's peace and faithfulness in our lives, we call those times mountaintop experiences, mostly because of this scripture. And typically, when we have one of those experiences, we want to hold on to it too. We want it to last. We want it to be more than just a glimpse. But God interrupts Peter's excited brainstorm with a thundering proclamation. This is my beloved Son. And all of a sudden, this scene looks and feels very familiar. Earlier, when Jesus was beginning his ministry, when he went down to the Jordan River to be baptized, as he was coming up out of the water, the sky opened up and a voice from heaven spoke, "You are my beloved son." So down in the waters of baptism, God addresses Jesus. But up on the mountain, God turns his attention to the disciples and talks to them this time. "This is my beloved son. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to him." It's a strange command, given that beyond the unrecorded conversation between Jesus, Moses, and Elijah, Jesus hasn't spoken at all in this story. Listen to him. I think there is a particular, there was a particular part of Jesus' message that the disciples were struggling to listen to right at that moment. Just before they went together up the mountain, Jesus had been foretelling his own death and resurrection. Peter, for one, told him to just stop it. Stop it. But none of them could quite get comfortable with the reality that in order to get to resurrection, Jesus was going to have to go through death. In order for any of us to get to resurrection, we will have to go through death. What the disciples, what we are charged with listening to, is not an easy message. Listen to Mark 8, beginning in verse 34. "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their crosses, and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. This is my beloved son. Listen to him." God speaks those words, and it's over. The whole mountaintop experience, with its spectacular transformation, its cast of famous characters, and its voice from above, the whole thing just ends. It's over. Stunned and in awe, and probably still terrified, Peter, James, and John are left with the memory of the event. They get a glimpse of the glory, of the true presence of Jesus. They see for just a moment what is really real. And then it's just a memory. And yet, that glimpse can and will sustain them as they seek to listen to Jesus. He is headed to Jerusalem. He is headed toward resurrection. And the only way there is through his death. The disciples bank their lives on this transformational moment. They risk listening. They risk following and obeying, all because of a fleeting glimpse of what is really real. As I was doing some reading this week about talking to children about this story, one author noted that it's important to tell kids that some people may only get to experience this kind of closeness, this kind of revelatory moment once, maybe twice in their whole lives. That this is not our constant state of seeing things. And I thought, wow, somebody needs to tell us adults that we may only get one or two glimpses in our whole lives. 9 out of the 12 disciples didn't see it at all. Only Peter, James, and John got to glimpse it with their own eyes. We spend the majority of our lives only seeing in part, not seeing the full revelation of Jesus, not seeing the fullness of the mystery of grace. We get glimpses, sometimes one or two, sometimes more, but always in glimpses. But we choose to listen, to take up our crosses and follow because of those moments, those terrifying, beautiful, fleeting moments when God's glory is manifest before us somehow, and the voice of God calls, "This is my son. Listen to him." As we head into the season of Lent beginning this Wednesday, we have a chance to recommit to listening to Jesus. Lent is a time when we take seriously the reality that the only way to Resurrection Easter is to go through Good Friday's cross. Many people choose to give something up during this season. I like to think about making space so that something new might grow. It is a time for prayer, reflection, confession, and giving. And it is not always an easy time, neither within the church, as the church year unfolds this way, nor is it easy outside of the church as the gray doldrums of winter loom on ahead of us, making the bright glory of Easter morning seem quite far away. And so as we move into a time of commitment that'll have some singing and some speaking and then some singing again, I invite you to let the memory of the glimpses of God's glory that you have seen come to your mind. Remember those times with gratitude. And then think of a way that you might respond by listening to Jesus. You are invited to take that strip of paper and write a word, just one word, or draw a picture if you are not a words person. A word, maybe it's a name, an action like prayer, or an attitude like compassion. One word that helps you remember, and hold on to it. When the offering plate comes around, I'd like for you to drop it in there. But for now, simply remember and respond. The music will play in the background as you do that, and then we will all be invited to stand and sing and commit to listening well together to Jesus.